Blog Talk Radio.
So we're talking about this wit nay nay nonsense. What coordination does this freaking thing take? I mean, good God, at least the electric slide, the dip, at least there was some kind of coordination needed.
Yep.
You'd have to put one hand on your hip and then your other hand on your hip, and then when you dip and I dip and we dip. A paraplegic can do the whip nay nay thing. You can sit down in your wheelchair, put your arm out, I whip, you put your other arm, you whip. And then you pull back and you nay-nay. A paraplegic can do it. I mean, what the hell is this thing?
I have no idea.
How is this, how does this catch on?
I am so... What is the word I'm looking for? I am so, like, pop culture disconnected that I just have no flipping clue, to be truthful with you. It's like...
Good morning and welcome to the CNC Football Factory. That was just a little clip of our rant from yesterday from myself and my co-host. First off, let's start off with our introductions. I'm your host, CJ DeSimone. I'm joined, as always, by my partner in crime, my best friend, and my co-pilot here on this endeavor, Carlos the Hitman Sardinas. Carlos, what's going on, man?
Well, you'll never be catching the same material twice on our show. That's for sure. Yesterday, we... Well, here's the backstory on the whole whip nay-nay thing and why I went off on it. So last night we were celebrating my co-host's birthday. Yes, it's CJ's birthday. He's turning 23 again for the 20th year in a row. No, just kidding. We were celebrating his birthday last night. And his son comes up, Sean comes up, and he goes, "Hey, he's showing us some YouTube clips of video games and all this stuff," and then he starts doing the whip nay-nay dance, and I was like, "Shawnee, where'd you learn this?" He said, "I don't know, some girl that I know, she was doing it, and it was on some videos." So we decided to look at the origins of this ridiculous dance, and we saw the actual original video by Silento, and saw what basically is a 3-minute and 30-second song with about 7 words in it. And the dance moves that were in it, it took me aback, and I said, "This is trash. It's absolute trash. This is what passes for music and dancing now." And it really ticked me off. And so we decided to record it while we were imbibing a couple of drinks celebrating the birthday. And that hence you have the clip that you just heard.
Yes, we...
You're going to get me started again with this freaking thing. I don't even want to talk about it anymore.
No, I'm not.
It's trash.
No, I don't want to do that. It's total
garbage.
Trash. It's total.
It's Geno Smith versus the Buffalo Bills. It's that bad.
Oh, wow. Well, which time should we say?
The 3 interceptions in less than 5 minutes time.
Oh, wow. Oy vey. All right, well, today's an open mic episode. So, this is where you, the fan, have the opportunity to have your voices heard on the show. And it looks like that we actually do have a caller, and I want to bring him or her on because, again, this is an open mic episode. So let's rock and roll. Good morning and welcome to the CNC Football Factory. What is your name?
Hey, guys, 29 Murdoch here. How you doing?
What's going on, Alex? How are you?
Pretty good, guys. Enjoy the show. Love what you guys are doing. Love to hear spirited Jet fans. And just enjoy what you guys are doing. Keep up the great work.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling. What did you want to talk about today? It's open mic day. It's kind of slow news. So, hey, you know, you give us some topics. We'll talk about it.
Well, really, the only thing I really care about is the 40-something-year struggling Jet fan. Is are we ever going to get a franchise quarterback again? And that's all I really care about.
God bless. There's somebody else. When were you first a Jet fan, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh, sure. I saw Joe Willie running out of the stadium in Miami. I was a seven-year-old lad being hoisted on my father's shoulder, running around, raising my number one finger in the air like my father, running like an idiot in the living room, watching on the black and white television, of course. And I've been suffering ever since, and I really cursed the day that he my father was a Jet fan, because I've been in misery ever since.
You're dead on, man. You know what? I can't even argue that. Your question about when are we going to get a franchise quarterback? Well, as much as, you know, I think Geno Smith may improve this year, I don't think he's a franchise quarterback. I think we're looking at it at the very least. Whoever we pick next, and no, I'm sorry, Bryce Petty might be a nice pick in the fourth round, but I'm not exactly going all in on that one either. I think there's going to have to be someone we pick down the line that becomes a true next franchise quarterback. What do you think, CJ?
Yeah, I have to agree. I think that possibly Bryce Petty may actually get a chance to compete for the starting job somewhere in the future. And see, the good thing about this with the Jets drafting him is he's not thrust into the starting role right away. He has a chance to learn. He has a chance to, you know, really absorb the offense, get the little nuances for it, and then once he's able to compete, he could go out there. Now, for all we know, Bryce Petty could be the next franchise quarterback. I'm going to go out on a limb and say it. Maybe he will, maybe he won't. We don't know. So, again, he's an unproven commodity, and essentially it all depends on what kind of offensive system we're going to be running. So far, we've got Shane Daly. If you think about it, over the last, 5 to 6 years, Carlos, we've had at least three different offensive schemes, pretty much.
If you want to call them that. I mean, yeah. We had the Tony Sperano coaching the offense. Do you remember that? Would you call that offense? I would call it offensive, but I wouldn't call it an offense.
I definitely would use offensive.
Brian Schottenheimer, it's barely an offensive scheme. I think hopefully we could get some semblance of a decent offense this year. I want to ask our caller one thing, though, really, to be serious.
Sure.
As far as starting this year, which quarterback do you think gives us the best chance to win, Ryan Fitzpatrick or Geno Smith?
Well, I think just for athletic ability alone, I think we have seen flashes of Geno that has. I think he deserves the nod to start. But I think with the acquisitions that we've got this year, we got Revis back, we got Cromartie back. I don't want to hear this, you know, winning 5-6 years from now thing. We didn't pay all this money to win 5 or 6 years from now. I think they did what they did because the fans are sick and tired of, you know, fans like me and you and just sitting around waiting for something to happen. You know, the circus has left the town, so I'm very sick of every idiot on the internet that starts talking about, you know, same old Jets and the circus is still, you know, in the Meadowlands. Circus is gone, and it's gone forever with this new regime here. So I think what you have to do is you have to give Geno a chance. But unfortunately for the kid, he's not a kid anymore. He's going into his third year. I think he's on a very short leash. I really do. I think you give him 4 games, and I think if the Jets are 1-3 after 4 games, Geno Smith will never start a game again as an NFL quarterback, barring catastrophe of an injury.
I mean, usually I like to try to disagree with people, but I can't disagree with anything you said. I have actually trumpeted a lot of that on the show myself. CJ, I think you agree with the timeline even as far as giving him 4 games, and if it's going south, you yank him, you put in Ryan Fitzpatrick as the bridge to the future, and
absolutely,
you pull the plug on the Geno Smith experiment.
Yep, exactly. As a matter of fact, you know, as far as 4 games, I think that's actually a little bit lenient. I think at one time I was screaming for 3 games where, you know, you just, you know, because in an NFL season, when you compile losses back to back to back, and especially when you start out of the gate slow, it's very difficult for you to rebound. And then especially if you're chasing other teams in those wild card spots, those wins become very, very important. In a 16-game season, there's really very, very little margin for error. We're not talking about an 82-game NBA season. We're not talking about an 84-game NHL season where if you lose a few games or if you have a 6-game or 7-game losing streak, you can rebound eventually. No, we're talking about 16 games. And a potential loss at the beginning of the season could be the difference between whether or not you get in as the sixth seed in a wild card or whether you're home watching the playoffs because of, you know, a particular loss at the beginning of the season. And, you know, that's what makes it exciting, but also at the same right, that's also what makes it frustrating too. So, but I agree with you guys wholeheartedly. Geno Smith is going to be on an incredibly short leash. And once he starts faltering, I believe Todd Bowles will waste no time in putting Fitzpatrick in.
Well, I mean, and I'm not expecting, like, I'm not sitting here saying he's going to fail to start the season. I'm hoping that this offseason he's putting in the work and he's got weapons around him and he doesn't hold the ball so long. I think that was one problem that I really have with Geno Smith. It actually makes our offensive line look worse than what it was when he would drop back, he would just sit there and hang on to that ball for way too long. It was a huge knock coming out of West Virginia. And I think that makes our pass protection look worse than it actually is to a certain extent. But hopefully he picks it up and he at least can become a competent quarterback this year. If not, you have a guy that's at least not turnover prone, maybe not the best quarterback in the world, but someone that has played in the NFL and started before and is a legitimate competition in Ryan Fitzpatrick. And that's the first time I could really say that in a while. I mean, Michael Vick was no real competition for Geno Smith last year. Just wasn't.
No. Michael Vick was supposed to be just a mentor to Geno Smith and teach him how to be mobile within the pocket and so on and so forth. But let's face it, Michael Vick lost his step. So really, how much more would you be able to teach Geno Smith? I mean, you're just going to turn him into more of a turnover machine than he already was? He didn't need any help for that.
Yeah. Let me ask you one quick question. What are your realistic expectations for the New York Jets football team in terms of wins or losses, playoffs or not? What do you realistically expect? I know everyone wants to do well. We're going to make it to the playoffs. We're going to do that. But what do you really think would be a good, solid season this year?
Well, I won't profess to be able to break it down like you guys do, and I'm not trying to blow smoke up your butts, but I've listened to a lot of shows, a lot of sports talk shows that talk about the Jets and profess to know about the Jets. You guys really break it down the best I've ever heard, so I give you guys props. I heard you guys last week breaking
that,
down
man.
Each
I really
game,
do.
Breaking down the roster, who can make it, who can't make it, what they need to do. You guys are talking about offenses and defenses and breaking it down. I mean, you guys are sounding like you were in on the meetings with the team, so I really commend you guys for that. I mean, that was fantastic, breaking it down for me. Gave me a lot of insight. My personal feeling is, and I've broken down every game just like you guys, I don't have the schedule in front of me. I don't want to cheat and look on the computer here. But I think realistically, and this is a pie in the sky for me, would be 10-6 at an outside shot at making the playoffs. But I think this could be a very solid 9-team victory this year. I really do. I think a 9-7 is realistic.
And, CJ, I believe that was your prediction when we were talking about it earlier this summer.
Yes.
Right? I had it at 8, but I could easily see a 9 or 10. If we go 6-10 or 5-11, it's a failure. I'm sorry. With all the money that went out, we upgrade the secondary, we do all this nonsense, and we go 5-11 or 6-10, it's a bust. I don't know how else you put it. I don't know how else you could say other than it's kind of a bust.
If this team is going 5-11 this year, that means the offense completely broke down and we couldn't score any points, and there's just so much you can ask the defense to do in weeks 10 through 16. I think that's what's going to – if you're having a 5-11 season, that can't be on this defense. This defense on paper is a top-five defense.
Oh, we totally agree. We couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
So, hey, guys, listen, I want to bring someone else in on this, on this conversation. We got another caller on the line. So I want
to
bring
Robin going, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks again.
All right, man. Hey,
all
take
right,
care.
Alex,
call us back
again
next week or whenever you want, man. Thanks for
you
calling.
You too, buddy. Thanks, guys.
All right.
All right. Thanks again, Alex. Welcome to the CNC Football Factory. What's your name there, boss?
Hi, guys. It's Biff from Ireland.
Yeah,
oh,
how's
Biffy
it going, man? Thanks for joining us.
Yeah,
Biff.
How's my good friend?
Doing great, man. Hey, I signed up for your fantasy league. I'm going to ruin that thing, bro. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
You guys don't want me playing there.
Yeah, you're going to be like a shark. A shark. God help us.
You guys are going to be like not inviting me next year, I'm telling you.
Oh, well, it's only for fun and kicks.
Oh, exactly. I was talking to Jimmy Boyd, Jimmy Boyd, who's a one jet driver, I was talking to him, and it's nice to do that and have a good fun with the fantasy thing. You know, no cash involved, just pride. It's cool. But hey, Biff, what do you want to talk about?
Like all week, I started off this week listening to yourselves, and then Let's Talk Jets and a couple of other podcasts, and an awful lot of chat was about Geno Smith and this poll. Where he's 30 something, I think he's in around near the very bottom of the list.
Yeah, he was 32nd in one of them, and like 29 in another. I know there was a couple going around. There was one with ESPN. Mike Sando did one, I believe. He was 32nd in that one, and I think there was an NFL.com one where he was like 29 or something like that. I mean, really low, really low.
Yeah, to be honest, it's a smack in the face for Geno Smith. Because you look at the likes of Washington, Bills, and there's a couple of other clubs, NFL teams out there that have basically trash QBs and haven't done as well as Geno Smith. I know he's had, after having a roller coaster the last two seasons with the Jets, but the arrow's pointing up for Geno Smith. What's your take on it,
Biff? Well, I actually called into Let's Talk Jets earlier this week.
Yeah, listen to
it. And one of the things I was saying was, I mean, there's the obvious teams, like the Bills, right? I mean, would you rather have that quarterback situation or ours? I'd rather have ours. I'd rather have Geno Smith and Ryan Fitzpatrick versus an E.J. Manuel and a Matt broken-down Castle, or then take a look at Cleveland. You got Johnny Manziel and Josh McCown, who was a career backup. He only had one good season and cashed it in when he was in Chicago because he had Alshon Jeffrey and Brandon Marshall and Martellus Bennett to throw it to in a Mark Trestman offense. I could have thrown for 4,000 yards in that offense. I mean, and then the other one that I was talking to Tyson and Joe about was Washington. A lot of people give RG3 a ton of credit for what he did his first year, but what's he done since? And who's really behind him that's really that much better than what we have? You know, there's several teams where I would say,
to be honest with you,
quarterback situation's at least better than about four teams.
Carlos, I have to agree. I have to agree 100% with you because at this point, at least when you take a look at the Jets situation, despite the issues at the quarterback position, there still is a clear cut. You have your clear cut number one, you have your clear cut number two, and you have everybody else. You have a capable backup who's ready to step in just in case of any kind of catastrophic injury, and you have a number one quarterback who is probably ready to turn the corner. And if he's not, you're going to be going to your number two. There's just no ifs, ands, or buts about it. You take a look at the Buffalo Bills quarterback situation, dude, that is an absolute catastrophic dumpster fire. Okay, it's going from a dumpster fire that's going to turn into a warehouse fire. Okay, they already have issues on the offensive line, and it doesn't matter who's throwing the ball back there. Okay, pretty soon they're going to give a phone call to Quincy Carter, who's, God knows where the hell he is, probably, packing groceries at Winn-Dixie or something. I mean, at that point, what options do they have at quarterback? E.J. Manuel is not all that, like you alluded to, Matt Castle. Who's your other options over there?
Tyrod Taylor is actually a legitimate threat to start for the Buffalo Bills. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, there you go. Trash.
Yeah, I still don't buy it.
So, Biff, obviously, I think you agree with us on that point. Is there anything else that you had to add to the whole quarterback thing?
I just want to add this. Do you think it's actually 100% directed at Geno Smith? Or is it directed at him and the Jets? Because down through the years, the Jets seem like they're the most hated team in the NFL, and they're getting bashed left, right, and center. And to be truthful, I'm really, really tired of it. And I can't wait for the start of the season so the Jets can go out there with their new roster and punch the NFL in the face.
Well, you know, I think it's number two. I think it's the fact that, yes, Geno Smith, statistically, when you look at him, he towards the bottom of the league in almost every category, period. You can't argue that. But also, the national media, the local media, has this jet bashing mentality where it's almost autopilot. Like, they just, the first joke that pops in their head is, hey, let's make fun of the Jets any way we can. And you saw this in 2013 when everyone thought we'd go like 3 wins, 4 wins, and this team pulled out 8 out of their rear end. You know, and that was pretty difficult to do. But the team had enough talent on the roster, more than they were given credit for. I think it's both. I think Geno Smith has garnered the fact that he's not one of the top quarterbacks, period. He has to prove that he's better than what he's been. He's been towards the bottom. But to say that it's the worst in the entire NFL when you have, what, at least 2, maybe 3 rookies starting this year on top of the dumpster fire that's Cleveland and Johnny Manziel doing lines off of some chick's back at some kind of pool hall or something, and that's your starting you know, I mean, no, it's better off than that. So that's where I go, yeah, the media is just kind of, it's on autopilot when it comes to the Jet jokes. And, hey, you know what? I'm running short of material on this offseason, so let me pen a paragraph or two about how much the Jets suck. I mean, that's pretty much Rich Shimini's entire shtick, if you ask me.
Don't forget Manish.
We don't talk about that guy here.
We don't
say that name because I start having heart palpitations and I got to start taking my pills. And when I take my pills on air, it's not good.
Oh, my
God.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, here. I wanted to talk to you as well about Dean Milliner. There's certain guys out there saying that he'd be better suited to changing to safety. What's your thoughts on it? Because I'm against it. Because I'd rather see a guy of his caliber staying behind Revis, staying behind Cromartie, and rebuilding his body, his NFL career, and then coming out and taking Cromartie's job next season. Across
CJ, you go with this one. You go with this one first, bud.
Where do you want me to start?
Well, somewhere. Jeez.
At the beginning.
Start somewhere. Do something. Say something.
Something. No, actually, Carlos, I'm going to turn this one over to you because you probably would be better to define this better than I could, because I'll just start rambling on and we don't have that much time today. So.
No, and I hear you. We have kind of a shorter show today. So, all right. I agree with you, Biff, in the fact that, no, I wouldn't convert him to safety. One, we just signed a safety and drafted a safety in the first round, on top of having halfway decent ones back there for once. I mean, not great, but at least depth guys and Antonio Allen and so on and so forth. D. Milner needs to stay a cornerback because, when he was drafted, he was supposed to be an elite cornerback, and you don't just give up on those guys after 3 years. I understand the injury concern. But you look at the top cornerbacks in the league, outside of Darrell Revis, they don't become elite overnight. It takes a couple years anyway for them to go from trash to halfway decent to good. It's one of the toughest positions to go from college to the pros. And when you're talking about like a Cromartie who's basically, you know, a hip injury away from being on a walker, you know, he's not the long-term solution. You need to have some horses in the bullpen, so to speak. If we're talking about baseball, you need to have some guys back there that could step up in a couple of years and be the next starter. That's how teams that have a long-term plan operate. So I completely agree with you, Biff. He should stay a quarterback. Mm-hmm. The safety thing is nonsense. It's nonsense.
Yeah. I'd rather if they were looking at Dexter McDougal as a free safety. Maybe next year, if he's still there, because he was a third-round draft pick, and Milner is a first-round draft pick, and he's a much, much better prospect in my eyes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was a lot of people when he was drafted. Like, there were people talking about him in the top 5. You know, a lot of people forget that, but he was the number one cornerback target of that draft without blinking an eye. He was talented. You could see that in Alabama. He's had some health issues, but if he could get over that and he could sit back and learn this year from two of the best, he could develop into someone that's going to be starting back there for the next 5 years. Why would you screw that up and say, oh, no, we're going to turn you into safety? That's like a Rex Ryan move, man. Like, hey, Antonio Allen, why don't you become a quarterback because that'll be fun? No, you don't do that.
Yeah, no, not
organizations don't do that.
Yeah, and you just don't have the pressure
right, exactly.
either.
So you have a guy over here who is a natural cornerback. You switch him to safety. You're going to already potentially ruin his career as it is. Look at what happened to Antonio Allen. Okay, I mean, you just don't do that. You can't switch a guy out of his natural position, put him in a place where he's going to be prone to making mistakes, and you're just creating more weaknesses than you already have on the defense. And right now, our defense is pretty stout. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Leave him be.
Yeah, I mean, you went out and signed this entire secondary, basically. You signed an entire secondary. So you don't have to sit there and make stupid moves like that. So, you know, I don't know where the idea originated from, Biff, but it's a stupid one.
Yeah.
Right.
I think it's someone just looking for a story because they're bored. But I can't think of
that. Well, I can relate to that. I can relate to it. Really, you know, outside of Sheldon Richardson getting, popped for, his drug use, there's really not a whole lot that's happened since all the signings and the trades and stuff. It's been a dead zone. But, I mean, that's just reaching. That's a reach.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. So,
all right, guys.
I have
one more question for you, right? What's your biggest fear going into training camp and for the NFL season for the Jets, except for Geno Smith?
Oh, so we got to take the obvious one off the table.
Yeah.
All right.
Too easy.
TJ, you're fielding this one, right? You want to go?
Yeah, I'm going to field this one. We're going to speed this up because we're starting to come up against it here. So, essentially, the biggest fear that I have with the Jets going into the NFL season is the stability of the offensive line. We've got some young pieces in there. We need some guys to step up. If there ends up being a catastrophic injury at one of those positions, okay, where someone is out for an extended period of time and that backup that's there cannot step in and play the role, the running game could possibly suffer and it could actually, disrupt a lot of stuff that Chan Gailey likes to do with this offense when he's at the helm. That's the biggest fear that I have going in. Carlos?
Well, I mean, I guess that's my biggest fear, too. I think maybe I'll go a little bit more generic because talking about the offensive lines, looking at the different units across the AFC East and around the league, I mean, outside of your Dallases and some other really good teams that have good offensive lines, everyone has holes on the offensive line. I think our holes aren't as bad as other teams' holes, but it's expounded by the fact that Geno Smith holds onto the ball too long and when he drops back. Now, my assumption is that with Chan Gailey's system, a lot of quick slants, three-step drops, not going to be as big of an issue. You just have to be barely competent up front. And I think the Jets, for the most part, could do that. I think my biggest fear is the offense as a whole underperforming and not being able to convert in the red zone. That was our problem last year. We could get up and down the field okay enough, but never could punch it in. And that's a whole offensive unit, not just the offensive line itself. That's the skill players. I mean, as much as we added key players, we really didn't add a ton of key players. We added Brandon Marshall, really. That's about it as far as anyone that's really going to make an impact to this team on the offense. So we have one key piece being added to a team that was almost dead last when it comes to red zone efficiency, scoring, any kind of offensive production whatsoever. So my biggest worry is we can't score enough points to keep up with the others. It's not just the offensive line. It's the offense as a whole.
Yep.
Yeah, that all comes down
to
Geno Smith and Chan Gailey. Because Marty
Montgomery,
when he got into the red zone, every time he seemed to have a brain fart and just try and complicate things too much. And then 90% of the time, the Jets get into the 5-yard line or maybe the 2-yard line and he takes Ivory out of the game, puts in a smaller back. Doesn't make sense.
Absolutely agree with you, Ben. Hey,
okay,
I want to thank you so much for calling in,
guys.
We're going to be wrapping up, and we'll definitely be listening next week when you guys drop the new podcast or whatever it is, man.
Okay.
No Fly Zone. Go check it out, listeners.
Support. Okay, guys, have a good weekend.
All righty. Have a good one, Biff. Thanks again. All right, guys. That wraps up another episode of the CNC Football Factory. For my host, Carlos the Hitman Sardinas, and myself, CJ DeSimone. Thanks again for tuning in. We'll see you guys next week. Lonely Hearts, take us home.